Welcome to the first of two podcasts, downloadable from fact461.co.uk. The podcasts celebrate the release of Factory Records, the complete graphic album, a book which collects together much of the output of the famous Manchester record label and provides some marvellous commentary to accompany the images. What we're going to do is listen to some extracts from the book's introduction, along with clips of some of the music that provided the vehicle for this wonderful artwork. The podcasts are independently produced, and we encourage you to follow the link on the fact461.co.uk website to buy a copy of this excellent piece of work if you haven't already done so. Hope you enjoy the podcasts and the book. Factory was more than just a label, it was a cultural institution. Not only did it produce some of the most acclaimed records of the period, including the output of Joy Division, New Order and the Happy Mondays, to name only three bands, but it also gave rise to some of the most stimulating artwork and design of the late 20th century. Today, while Factory may have ceased to exist as a commercial entity, its spirit and influence endure in popular culture mythology, and its unique and chaotic story has been revisited again and again in magazine articles, television documentaries, music compilations, and in the 2002 feature film, 24 Hour Party People. Over a 14-year period, between 1978 and 1992, Factory created and sustained a visual profile admired and emulated worldwide, one that placed it alongside the labels Blue Note, ECM and 4AD as an archetype of the successful marriage of music and design. Even though each label thought carefully about the appropriate design approach, only Factory had a multifaceted programme that took design to the core of its being. Indeed, it's fair to say that Factory pushed design further than any record label, past or present. Its non-conformist vision gave rise to some of the most innovative sleeves of the era, and led the company into ambitious and era-defining three-dimensional projects, setting it apart still further from its contemporaries. From the beginning, Factory was more of a collective of like-minded individuals than a structured business. Profitability was always a secondary concern. This freewheeling approach to the business of running a record label, whereby the rules were made up as they went along, probably meant that Factory was destined to disintegrate from the outset. In many ways, it's a wonder that it lasted as long as it did. Its unconventional approach extended to not signing contracts with artists and avoiding promotional duties. Co-founder Tony Wilson, originally a Granada TV presenter, saw Factory as a laboratory experiment in popular art. Its survival was propped up by the success of major acts Joy Division, New Order and the Happy Mondays. The catalyst behind the formation of Factory was the punk movement of the 1970s. This cultural rebellion sought to break down barriers and give everybody the opportunity to participate in intellectual and or aesthetic production on their own terms, irrespective of any formal talent or skill. Untrained musicians were empowered to form bands, while untrained designers could produce the artwork. While punk had a strong collective aesthetic, the defining characteristic of the age was this DIY, do-it-yourself ethos. What will you sell if the glasses and suit heart and soul that won't wear out? That's not enough. I want what's inside. Fish fill at night when curve right through my eyes. I'm looking for some words to call my own, not worn out phrases and hand me down. But on its back in a combi can't go in under. You can feel them strip me down to the rust inside. This is the way. Factory's direct link to punk can be traced to an evening in June 1976 when Wilson and actor Alan Erasmus attended a performance by the Sex Pistols at the Lesser Free Trade Hall in Manchester. Fired up by this spirit, Wilson and Erasmus established a club night showcasing the new generation of bands inspired by the same movement. Their action was in part entrepreneurial in terms of creating a space for this burgeoning scene, but they were also genuinely passionate music enthusiasts themselves. There remains a difference in opinion as to how Factory was chosen as a name for this club night, but the usually accepted version is that Erasmus came up with it in recognition of a parallel between industry creativity that takes place in a factory and musical creativity. The name is inextricably linked to Manchester's post-industrial sense of place, while at the same time drawing on pop artist Andy Warhol's notions of collective creativity in a factory environment. From the outset, Factory demonstrated a commitment to design. Not only did it commission a young graphic designer, Peter Saville, to create the poster for the opening night of the club, but it also made him a partner alongside Wilson and Erasmus. Saville would go on to define the label's visual program and educate his associates in the process. Wilson concedes that it was unlikely that Factory would have pursued such a design program had Saville not been involved. The poster was given the label's first catalogue number, FAC 1, beginning a tradition that would last to the very end. For most record labels, design means little more than the obligatory packaging, a means to an end. Although they invest time and money in the construction of seductive branding, it is ultimately mere styling. Rarely is there the volition to push things further, let alone make design central to the label. Factory, however, believed that its products had real significance and that there was a critical relationship between the manufacturer and the consumer. Although the word factory carries with it connotations of faceless mass production, there was something boutique and considered about its products. On this point, Wilson has said that factory aimed to create a form of communication between the label, the creator of artifacts, and the people who buy the artifacts. He also said that the relationship between factory and its public was based on mutual respect and a desire to produce the most beautiful objects imaginable. This grand design narrative is woven together by Factory's unique take on the indexing systems normally used for stock management. Factory designated catalogue numbers to practically everything it was involved in, from recorded releases to posters, stationery, a nightclub, the Hacienda Fact 51, an outlook for Factory ephemera, and even a civil lawsuit brought against them by a disgruntled business partner. This meant that all items allocated a number were not only branded as factory products, but were given greater currency by placing them within a specific cultural context. Factory took every available opportunity to make their items unique, beginning with the first record release, Fact 2. This double 7-inch, designed to emulate records from the Far East, with a plastic-wrapped gatefold sleeve, was unconventional without being flamboyant. All 5,000 copies were sold, setting the label on its way. There are countless examples of the label producing such distinctive items, even going so far as to commission different artwork for 7 and 12 inch formats, not to mention fully designed covers for 12 inch remixes, at a time when most remixes were released in perfunctory white sleeves. This total approach to design extended to three built projects: the Hacienda Fact 51, Dry Bar Fact 201, and Factory HQ Fact 251. Upon the completion of the latter, Wilson claimed to have successfully triangulated the city of Manchester with buildings in the north, south and west. These projects, all designed by Ben Kelly, gave a physical dimension to the language and aesthetic of Factory. Both the Hacienda and Dry were radical statements that set new standards for club and bar culture in Britain. The sensibilities and attitudes activated these spaces, yet neither was in any way kitsch. These proved to be the label's most costly ventures.